Hey, everybody. It is June the 2nd, 2021. It is 12:30 p.m. here on the West Coast. Today, I'm with Evan Herman, and he's in a town called Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Evan is the podcast host of the Whole Person Podcast. He's also, like me, a real estate broker. Evan specializes in personal growth and wholeness in the areas of faith, family, finances, friendship, fitness, and fun. Evan's goal is to add value to any audience that he speaks to. The value that Evan wants to bring to people is first that they are not alone in the journey of personal growth, and that it is about the process, not the destination, and that with grace and patience and consistency, as well as failures and learning from it all, that's what shapes us into the person that we are supposed to be. Now, Evan has gone through tremendous grief. He's going to tell us about that. And so he's really an expert in dealing with grief. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk all about his podcast. Let's welcome Evan to the show right after this.
Welcome to the Newtown Big Dreams Podcast, an interview-style talk show that's your gateway to the fabulous and fascinating people who relocated to start a new life. Whether you're new to our podcast or your city, our fellow neighbors from across Canada, North America, and the entire English-speaking world share their stories of reaching new horizons and big dreams. So sit back and relax as we navigate in-depth and intimate conversations with entrepreneurs, thought leaders, executives, creatives, and anyone who can share their story about their Newtown big dreams. And now, here's your host, Luke J. Menkes.
Evan, thank you so much for coming on the show today. How are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fantastic. So you're in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. I haven't heard of it before. Tell us about that town. Where is it located, roughly speaking?
Yeah, so it's a suburb of Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Okay.
And so it's really, I love it. It's one of the safest cities in America. We've consistently had that rating, I don't know, 10 to 15 years in a row now, where we're always are in the top 50, but I think we made it in the top 25 over the past few years.
Awesome. Have you always lived there?
I have not. I grew up in Hayes, Kansas, and moved here to Tulsa back in 2007. Went to the university here of Oral Roberts University. And then while I was here, I met a local girl and dated her, then got engaged and got married and stuck around.
Right. So you two decided to stay there.
I did. Yeah.
Awesome. What's the status currently of the COVID situation in Oklahoma and Tulsa, Broken Arrow in particular? What's with the lockdowns and what's with the COVID?
What's COVID? So
I know. That's a good answer. Are they still forcing you to wear a mask when you go into locations?
What's COVID? I don't think we've heard of this here in this part of the world.
That's good to know. That's really good.
That's my answer. No, my city did not require a mask mandate. A few cities around us did, but my city didn't. We did pretty well. Tulsa, mm-hmm. There were some moments Tulsa spiked and they wanted the other cities to create masks mandates because everyone would go into Tulsa's hospitals because that's where the hospitals are. So it felt like it overwhelmed their hospitals as well. But overall, we were doing really, really well. No mask mandates. We were open probably when the initial lockdown or shutdown happened. It was supposed to be 2 weeks. I think we did 3 or 4 weeks total, and then businesses started reopening, and no one really ever locked down after that.
That's awesome.
So we in the words of William Wallace, freedom!
Right? It must seem really bizarre to you seeing what's going on in, like, New York and Los Angeles. I mean, people have gone completely crazy with this stuff.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, I'm a real estate agent and people are leaving California, New York, Seattle in droves. I don't care if they come. I just don't want to bring, I don't want people to bring that, the politics.
Yeah.
Exactly. For the areas that made it as bad as it was. So come, but leave your voting record there.
Exactly. 100% agree with you. 100% agree. So you're a real estate agent, as you mentioned. So am I. So I want to talk to you about real estate. But first, I want to talk about your whole person concept. Yeah. What is the whole person concept?
The whole person is about faith, family, finances, friendship, fitness, and fun. And we need all of those areas in life to be functioning well in order to really have peace and harmony. And when one of those is out of balance, it affects all the other areas of our life, whether we realize it or not. And so it is really important that we have a holistic approach about our life versus just living completely out of balance in one area for too long. Now, don't get me wrong. There are times and seasons where we do need to live out of balance to achieve specific goals or to get certain things accomplished that we have to. But then how we're able to bring it back in the middle. So for example, you know, if you're 500-600 pounds, yeah, you need to live out of balance on the health aspect to get your life back in control.
Right.
You know, and that piece of advice, believe it or not, came from Mark Cuban. I interviewed him once for like 5 minutes and it was the only audio that never worked.
Right.
And that was the worst feeling ever.
What, why was it so short? Like, did he just have to go?
No. So it was a platform that he's bringing to market. And I was blessed to be an early user. And so very early on, he got on it a couple times and would talk to like the 30 of us that was on the platform.
Nice.
And so I recorded it, but my audio didn't work.
Oh, damn.
It stunk.
Oh, man. Well, maybe one day you can get him back on.
I would love that. Yeah.
So you as a person, Evan, what is the biggest thing that helped you to change and grow as an individual?
I think a few things. One, this podcast was probably one of the biggest motivating factors to help change my life because it provided accountability, but then also it connected me to individuals who I'd really never get the chance to talk to without the podcast, and to learn from some amazing men and women really helped shift my life. So that was a big proponent of it. The other thing too is, you know, I want to answer that, but I want to answer that in six different ways because each one of those areas of life I have a different answer for. But in general, the biggest aspect of the whole person came from me going to college at Oral Roberts University. It's a faith-based university where they believe in the whole person, spirit, mind, and body. Mm-hmm. And so that was ingrained into me long, long ago, and it has always been ingrained since then. And as I got older, I really wish I took this to heart. How can I do that now? And I would say one of the biggest lessons through podcasting that I learned is that, you know, we all have this idea, this image of ourselves that we're trying to become. Yeah. And that is idolatry towards God and self-hatred. And as a believer, idolatry is a really big, like, no-no.
Yeah.
And, you know, I started thinking about it, and the guy, Craig Westhoff, he's like, it's idolatry towards God because you're saying that you would have made yourself better than how God made you with your hairline, with your giftings, with your abilities. I'm not talking about our character flaws or sins or whatever like that, but I'm talking about the way God designed us. And when we think we could have done something better or different, that's when it becomes idolatry. Because it becomes our own image of ourself that we're trying to reach, attain, and somewhat idolize and worship. But the other part of it with self-hatred is that I will never be able to be the best version of myself if I don't like the version of myself now. We can be unsatisfied with our current version and be working for upgrades, you know, new software. But we have to love ourselves through the process of change. We have to be gracious to ourselves.
Right.
And without learning how to love each other now, we'll never be the person and be able to love that ideal person that we have in the future.
Mm-hmm. Is that what your podcast, the Whole Person podcast, is that what it's about, these kind of topics?
Yes.
When did you get the idea to start that podcast?
6-7 years ago. And then I sat on it. It had to have been 8 or 9 years ago because I sat on it for 5 years.
Yeah.
Before I took action. So it was probably 5 years ago because I'm 2.5 years into podcasting.
I see. So 2.5 years, have you been pretty consistent since you got started?
Very consistent. Yeah. I think I've maybe missed 1 or 2 weeks the entire time of publishing.
Nice.
But I have a pipeline of like 4 or 5 months now. In general, I've always worked towards that. Mm-hmm. And so I always have – so like I could not record for 3 or 4 months and be just fine. But right. I designed it intentionally so that I can – you know, I'm living out of balance in the creating mode so that actually like if something were to get disrupted in my life, I can also be very attentive at that point.
Mm-hmm. So tell us some of the topics you cover and some of the guests that you've had or you're excited to interview in the weeks ahead.
Yeah. So other than Mark Cuban, one of my most notable guests recently was Kevin Sorbo. Okay. He played – if I don't know if you remember the – not sitcom, but the TV series Hercules back in the 90s.
Yeah.
He was Hercules. And he's had a lot of other roles in movies and done well. He's been in God's Not Dead 2. Really, really great guy. And so he's been on my podcast. Are you a football fan?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember Pat Flynn? Or not Pat Flynn. He's the podcaster. Pat Tillman?
Yeah. Yeah. Vaguely. Yeah.
So Pat Tillman was a football player who gave up everything to go be a Army Ranger shortly after September 11th, gave up millions, and died under friendly fire.
Yes.
I interviewed one of the guys that shot at Pat. And it's a very tragic, very heartbroken story because Pat and him were friends. Mm-hmm. But the situations that led to it, obviously it wasn't his fault in the terms of how everything played out, the lack of communication, the poor leadership that led to it, you know, circumstantially had one or two things been different, it wouldn't have happened. But, you know, that's probably the longest episode I've done because there was just so much there. Mm-hmm. I've also had Michael Hyatt. He's a well-known author, public speaker, Angela Duckworth, Andy Andrews, Jim Stovall. He's written multiple movies and like 40 plus books. Kevin Miller, who hosts the Ziggler podcast, Tom Ziggler, Dan Miller, Anthony O'Neill. Anthony's a cool dude. He's a Ramsey personality for Dave Ramsey. You know, so awesome. These are just some of the people that I've had on the show.
That's fantastic. I want to ask you, how did you get so many great guests? Like, what's your process? Because I'm going to try to copy that or copy absolutely some of that.
Essentially it's door knocking, you know, sending emails, finding the gatekeepers or the watchdog, talking to them and, you know, trying to set things up. And sometimes it goes directly to the people through there. Depends on how well and known they are. But, you know, a lot of times I deal with a front person. And the way I go about it is I write a very nice letter that I would say 50% of it is already scripted, but I just change out verbiage and things based off of who the guest is, like why I liked their career and what that career meant to me. Those things change, but some of the other stuff like, hey, my name's Evan Herman. I'm with the Whole Person Podcast. You know, I detail each invitation.
Stay with us. We'll be right back. Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Yeah, that's great. That's really great. So you mentioned the Pat Tillman story.
Yeah.
All of us, especially if we live long enough, we're all going to go through periods of grief sooner or later. You know, as a young person, I didn't really have anybody super close to me that died. And my grandma that I wasn't so close to died, I think when I was 17. But that was the first person. So, and then as you get older, you go through more and more experiences. What do you think is the best way for a person to work through grief?
Oh boy. My life has been full of grief. For the listeners who don't know me, since 2008, I've lost on average one near person in my life every single year. Wow. Sometimes more and then sometimes zero. But on the law of averages, it averaged to be about one a year. I've lost, had a premature stillborn daughter. I had a guy die in my arms once. My grandfather passed away in front of me. My grandmother passed away in front of me. I had two of my best friends die in a plane crash back in 2012. One was my roommate in college and one was a man in my wedding. I had a mentor fall off of a mountain. He shouldn't have been hiking to begin with because of just his, it was a very dangerous walk and he was like 500 plus or more pounds. Like he shouldn't have been doing that, but he was a great man, very wise. But he wanted to go see this historical building and lost his footing and fell. You know, at a very young age, I had a mentor of mine die from a brain aneurysm. He was 28 at the time. I've, you know, outlived what he did, and it just feels weird to think about. And so going through the process of grief, I want people to understand that it never goes away officially. Like, it gets easier. But this idea that grief will one day be gone is a lie. And that it is okay to mourn, that it is okay to cry and to show your emotion for two things. You know, I don't want to over-spiritualize stuff, but I will tell you what has helped me.
Okay.
The Bible says, blessed are those that mourn, for they shall be comforted. So not only did I receive comfort from God through the process of mourning, but then it also allowed the community around me, for other friends and other family, to love me. And because I didn't hide that, that was really healing, because I just got an outpouring of love from so many different people through all these different things. And then also having to be that for other people. You know, my one of my best friends that died in the plane crash, one of my other best friends, him and I, every year we take turns sending his mother flowers for Mother's Day, because he died like 2 days before Mother's Day.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, so I do things to honor those people as well. And that really helps. But at the end of the day, to know that the biggest thing that has helped grief is to learn and to understand and to feel the love of God. Like that has been my biggest thing. Because when, so you know, I've talked about my friends, but when we lost our daughter, I remember when she was born, she was already gone. But they really pumped my wife full of a lot of medication and just different stuff so she wouldn't have to feel any of it. And so because of all that, she was lucid sometimes, but for the most time she was sleeping. And so that made me alone in the room by myself. And we got to have her body with us for about 7.5 hours. And for the majority of those hours, I was holding her when my wife was sleeping. And, you know, it was around 7:30 at night. The nurse came in and said, "Mr. Herman, we're going to have to take her body now." Her death was difficult. But when I had to hand her body over, the pain, the desperation, anxiety, it felt like life itself was being sucked right out of me. Mm-hmm. Fast forward a few hours, I'm laying on the couch. And I said, "God, where's your love in all this? Because I don't see it." Mm-hmm. "I don't blame you. You didn't cause this to happen. And I believe you to be a good God. But I need to see your love in this." Mm-hmm. And then right then I got this picture. And it was the moment that I was giving her body away, that pain, that desperation, the anxiety, it felt like life itself was being sucked right out of me. And I clearly heard that is how I feel anytime any of my children live a life without ever knowing my love. Mm-hmm. And then in that moment, I just felt like I understood the creator of the universe when people who he created don't understand the magnitude of his love for us. Mm-hmm. And then being this hurt and broken father, I was just like, "Well, why did you create her? Why couldn't we just have skipped, you know, the conception part?"
Yeah.
And I felt like him say, "Because her eternal plan and her eternal purpose far outweighs any hurt, pain, or suffering that you might face, which is why I still created humans knowing they would sin and having to send Jesus." And so being this father, I'm like, "Oh, well, Grace, she must be doing something awesome then. Like, what's her eternal plan? What's her eternal purpose?" And it's one of those slap your forehead moments that you already know the answer and you just didn't realize it. And I felt him say, "Her eternal plan and purpose is for her to dwell with me and me to dwell with her. It's about relationship." Mm-hmm. And in that moment, I just realized, like, out of my hurt, out of my pain, out of my desperation, out of my suffering, God can understand and sympathize with where I'm at. Mm-hmm. And so just leaning into that was probably one of the biggest helps in my life.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're obviously a person who's very strong with your personal faith. For someone who is not, you know, a lot of people believe, people sometimes had contact with the Bible and spiritual things when they were younger, but kind of lost contact with it. If someone wants to grow in their faith, what advice would you give them?
There's this idea that we have to become better to come to God, that we have to, you know, make ourselves more approved before we come to him, which is one of the biggest lies. There's a lot of religion. There's a lot of hate shaming. Mm-hmm. God loves us where we're at. And out of his love, we change. Mm-hmm. Because we, as we grow in relationship with him, it's not because we have the ability to make it happen, but it's because through our relationship, through time spent, through learning and education, we just become more like him. And through that, we will naturally change in our lives. We'll change and look different. Like Jim Rohn says, you are the average of the 5 close people that you hang out with. Well, if God, the creator of the universe, you know, and not just like, "All right, God, what do you want to tell me today?" But, you know, there's so much truth in the Bible. And what happens is people freak out when the Bible is brought up because, you know, Christianity and hatred this and hate that. And we're going to condemn you to hell this. And what has happened within Christianity is that for a while, it came off as militaristic, that there's this spiritual war and that we're going to war against Satan and the devil. Let's be honest, the devil and Satan's no match for God. So there's not much of a fight there to begin with. The war is between Satan and us, not between him and God. And so when we are growing as individuals in our relationship with God through spending time with him, what the inhibiting factor is for a lot of people is like, well, we need the church to be more progressive so that You know, we can share more love. We can, the world's idea of love is really, what's the word?
Twisted.
Yeah. It's fake. It's not real. So when I hear people like, well, the church needs to be more progressive. No. The church needs to get back to its roots. Mm-hmm. And when the church gets back to its roots, then you will see love. You know, when the woman who was caught in adultery was taken before Jesus, what should have happened by Jewish law and custom, that the lady should have been stoned to death.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then Jesus said, you know, he who without sin cast the first stone. And then everyone left, and he was the only one there, and he didn't. He said, go and sin no more. But the other thing, too, is for him to be in her presence and to touch her would make him unclean and unholy.
Mm.
So we don't have a Jesus that doesn't reach down into the muck. He absolutely does. Mm-hmm. When he went into Samaria, you know, Samaritans were counted as dogs to the Jewish people because Samaritans were somewhat Jewish and very mixed culture from being captives and slaves from other places. So there was a lot of interracial marriage and cultures.
Mm-hmm.
So because they weren't a thoroughbred, Jewish people looked down on them. But the first person that Jesus talked to was a woman who was even a lower class citizen of culture in that time.
Right.
So when people say Jesus doesn't love us because of our sin, to put it simply, that's a bunch of bull crap.
Right. That's false.
He extends culture. He extends past culture. He extends past racism. He extends past social justice. He extends past what we perceive. And he is truth. So if we can get back to him, then things will be better.
Yeah. Right. So you've obviously learned a lot of lessons, often in a difficult way, very difficult way. And you've touched on some of them. Tell us some of the biggest lessons you've learned in your life besides what you've already told us.
Man, well, I'd say one of the biggest ones that changed my life I've already touched on was learning how to love myself through the process of changing grace. I think the other thing, too, is learning how to make decisions. Because so often, when we're presented with life circumstances, we don't know what decision to make. And then we try to pros and cons it and then make our best judgment. And sometimes that's what we have to do. But the thing is we need a preset determination of values. We need a preset understanding of how we're going to make decisions before they come up. Right. So, for example, if some woman wants to come up to me and wants to sleep with me and seduce me, it's not going to happen because I'm predetermined. I'm not trying to figure it out in the moment.
Right.
And so, and that's a very drastic example, but we have to have core values and belief systems that allow us to make decisions before those circumstances arrive. And then also, when it comes to purpose, do the same thing. So many times, we're trying to chase purpose and chase things versus understanding that we're supposed to live out purpose. So for example, the call on my life is to live out the heart of God by loving others back to life. Mm-hmm. So when I'm invited to do things, I first check it against that. Okay, well, does that fulfill that purpose? Yes, okay. So then I go to my giftings. Okay, I'm a good communicator. I can connect well with people on a one-on-one basis. I have a deep understanding of scripture and relationship with God. Okay, so if those are my giftings, if I have a gift of discernment, will I get to use those giftings in that setting? And if so, that's another yes. And so I have to know going into things what I'm using to make decisions by. Mm-hmm. And that has been a tremendous help. And it helps tell you to say no to things.
Yeah. Right. So how would you define failure in your life and how do you overcome it?
Failure is a stepping stone. That's what I define failure as. Mm-hmm. I have a son right now who he's getting ready to turn 6. And anytime something gets hard, whether it's a video game or reading or drawing or trying to change the TV channel, it's not working, he quickly gets emotional, gets upset, and freaks out and wants to give up.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if I don't train him and what that looks like as an adult.
Right.
And so what I've learned is that failure and conflict and friction are the building blocks and stepping stones of success. That it is okay to fail and to fail hard. What's not okay is to give up. And you can even course correct. Because sometimes failure is like, oh, you know what? I need to course correct. This isn't the course I'm supposed to be taking. I need to take a different course. That's still not failure. That's course correcting.
Right.
And so for me, how many real estate phone calls did I have to get hung up on before I can get a listing? Those are failures. Every one of those that tell me to go to hell is a failure. But, you know, when I do hit that one, it equals a $7,000 or $8,000 check when I sell that house. So am I going to give up because of persecution, because of failure? No. Failure is the building blocks and stepping stones of success.
Right. Tell us a little bit about your real estate career, because I'm really curious. How long have you been a realtor?
8 years.
Years.
Mm-hmm.
Many years. How did you become great at it?
I still don't feel like I'm great. You know, so what happened is shortly after we lost our daughter, I was working at a hardware store and I asked off for Mother's Day, you know, 2 weeks in advance. They didn't give it to me. I asked off for Father's Day 2 weeks in advance. They didn't give it to me. They made me work on very painful holidays shortly after we lost our first child.
Wow.
And that was a very motivating factor for me to want to be in control of my schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And then real estate presented itself as an opportunity. And I had like 21 jobs in 4 years. And a lot of that was part-time temp work. You know, there's only a few of them that were supposed to be long-term that because of bad leadership, I exited early.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in that situation because I accepted the job. I was desperate, so I took it.
Right.
So I don't blame that on them. I blame that on me. And so I've had to learn how to take extreme ownership of my situations. And I've talked enough where I forgot what your original question was, because I was coming back to a point here, but I what was that?
We were talking about failure, but also your real estate career. And I was asking, how did you become great? How did you get really great?
That led me to real estate.
Right.
And then consistent training and education and tons of failure. Like, I became good because I failed a lot. And instead of quitting, like 98% of all the other agents that started with me have done, I just kept learning from my failures.
Mm.
Plain and simple. And then I had to humble myself many times. There were many, I think I've had 3 or 4 or 5 jobs throughout me selling real estate in addition to real estate, just because real estate at the time wasn't making enough money for me and I needed money now.
Yeah.
And so instead of pridefully trying to hold on to real estate, I also like, you know what? I'm going to go work for someone for a little bit, but I'm going to keep real estate because I'm going to keep working and selling and keep working that. And then, you know, it would grow, do well. And then I'd leave that part-time job. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, in another difficult season of life, you know, I wasn't afraid to go work.
Right.
And so I feel like that made me great just because I was able to stay in the game. And then the longer I've been in it, the more notoriety I've gotten, the more I'm on top of people's minds because I've been in it so long that like now when people think of real estate, they think of me. And that's where the success is. If you can get that brain territory, mm-hmm. and people start referring you, that's the very prosperous stage. You know, I on average sell around 15 homes a year. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many I'm going to sell this year. I honestly don't. You know, some agents are like, yeah, you know, I'm selling like crazy. I'm like, great, because like the market somehow only has 40 to 60% less listings than last year. So mm-hmm. I don't know where you're getting all that business, but send some of it my way, you know? Yeah. So, but then I also have to be gracious with myself and realize, all right, well, COVID happened. There's an adjustment. Prices are overinflated on the housing market right now, both in construction and in buying. So mm-hmm. a lot of people aren't doing anything because they're going to have nowhere better to go, which creates a catch-22. And I have to understand yeah. that, you know, the market is what it is. And I can still work and I can still grow and I can still succeed. But it might not be the way I thought it was going to look like.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty challenging. And I'm hearing the same thing kind of all over North America. There's a real shortage of listings. Mm-hmm. Do you see a lot of people coming from California and places like the yeah. states?
Yeah.
And Broken Arrow is pretty popular.
Yeah. People.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of, well, and they're coming in out of state and, you know, houses are 3-4 times the amount, but yet it's the same square footage. So it's like, but yet here it's way less. And so, yeah. you know, a lot of these people, when they sell their house where they're at, you know, they come here and they're able to pay in cash. And so it's really hard to compete against cash offers right now.
Yeah.
And so I have
yeah.
multiple buyers, but I mean, in a lot of this stuff, like I've shown one guy like 4 or 5 houses and we haven't written one offer because the houses have just been crap. Like they haven't yeah. been good. They've been serious issues. Like, dude, I know what this listing price says, but bro, you're not going to get a loan on this house because there's too many issues.
Yep.
And I was like, dude, but just so you know, when we come across that nice house and you like it, I said, you better be all in right away because obviously you can see that there's just nothing decent. And when that decent one hits, you got to jump on it.
Definitely. Yeah. 100%. So what are some of the things that you're passionate about besides what we've already talked about? So real estate, your yeah. faith, your podcast.
Yeah, I love podcasting. I'm really passionate about that. But I'm really passionate about ministry. Mm-hmm. I'm in the process of starting a ministry and it's going to be based around evangelism. And hopefully it will grow into tent ministry. That's the plan. But I have a heart so that people will know Jesus's love, not religion, not the hurt and the pain that the church has caused over years of misunderstanding, mm-hmm. but that people will get to experience Jesus. Like that's the introduction I want to make. And, you know, earlier I said, the call in my life is to live out the heart of God by loving others back to life. There's this image that I have in my mind. And I don't know if you've ever went swimming as a kid or even as an adult. Like, do you ever remember like being held underwater playing?
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, like you have no more air and then you can be, you have no more air and then you become desperate
yeah.
for air. And then a few more seconds go by and then you become even more desperate. And then yeah. all of a sudden they let go and then you're able to come back to the surface and you take that deep breath. And it feels like life itself enters your body and it re-energizes you. Like that's the feeling that I want people to walk away with. Mm. You know, they've been in this hurt, this pain, this desperation, the anxiety, but the moment they meet Jesus, life enters them. Mm-hmm. I want to lead people to that moment because it's life-changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that sounds, it sounds like you're on the right track with, what you're trying to do there. How would you define success? Would it be bringing lots of people to an understanding of Jesus or something else?
Something else. Well, there is part of that. I want to do that. Success for me, I've had to think about this a lot because since I don't have $1 million by now, mm-hmm. and I haven't created generational wealth and all of this stuff yet, I've really in my life looked down on myself. I've really felt unsuccessful and just didn't like myself for that. Mm-hmm. But I had to redefine what success was to me. And I had to pray about what that was. Mm-hmm. And for me, success is very simple. That all three of my boys will know Jesus and accept him as Lord and Savior and have eternal salvation. Mm-hmm. That is success. If those three things happen and I can lead them to Jesus, and then they have morals, character, and integrity when life gets hard that they don't compromise, I have done my job. And if they don't, I know they have their own free will and life happens and things can change. But I also would look at that as a failure.
Right. That makes sense. Makes a lot of sense, Evan. So, Evan, to wrap things up, tell us about your website, where people can find you, connect with your podcast.
Yeah, so my podcast is on all major platforms, The Whole Person Podcast. And it's also just add a .com to that is the website. I have a link on my website. You can go there and type in your email, and then you'll get a PDF of the 10 life-changing lessons that I've learned my first few years of podcasting that really just helped shape me in a better way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a one-page PDF, and I broke it down to just some of the biggest nugget. You know, instead of going out and elaborating, you know, I like bullet points like this, this, and just those alone are enough to be like, okay, I get that, you know, so definitely go grab that. But if you want to get in touch with me, you know, Evan Herman, that's another website. You know, my email is evan@evanherman.com, two R's in Herman. Find me on all social media platforms except Snapchat. And I really don't do much on TikTok or anything. But I do have Pinterest. And I just don't do a lot on Pinterest either, though. I like looking at pictures.
Right on. We'll put links to all that in the show notes. And I really want to thank you for your time and for being so open and honest with us. It's really refreshing to get to know you. Spend, you know, 30, 40 minutes to really get to know you a little bit better as a person. Well,
thank you so much for having me on the show and, you know, just let me be me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Newtown Big Dreams podcast with your host, Luke Menkes, and his authentic guests. And we love our listeners and hope you subscribe now to learn more about the amazing journeys of our incredible guests who relocated to find a new town, big dreams. And remember, make your dreams big.